So the reason I became interested in echocardiography was really the realization that we have this technique where we can see someone's heart very easily, very quickly, and very clearly, alongside our physical examination and our speaking with the patient. And I can remember the first time I ever saw an echo. I was a cardiology junior working in a hospital in Leicester, and I saw a patient and met the patient and examined them. And when we hear a patient's symptoms and when we listen to their heart, we start to try and decide what's wrong with their heart. And usually by listening to someone's heart with the stethoscope, you can get a good understanding of what the problem might be. But then the consultant who I was with at the time had an echo machine there. We got the patient ready and he put the probe on the chest, and within 20 seconds we were seeing the patient's heart. We were seeing the valve problem. And although it confirmed what we determined through our usual examination, suddenly we had much more detail. We had a very firm understanding of exactly what the problem was, the problem with the valve, why it had occurred, how bad the problem was, what the consequence that was having for that patient in terms of their heart function. And we were able to do all of that within 10 minutes in a test that was painless, did it at the bedside in front of the patient. We could show the patient the pictures. We could tell them the results straight away. There was no discomfort involved. And it really just struck me that this was a key technique that we must all be able to use and learn and deploy effectively. And although that was my first interest in echo, it quickly became clear that there's much more to echo than just that simple test I saw on that first day. And echo itself is complex and very detailed and can give us information about a vast number of things regarding heart function, not just heart valves. And for me, it's the wide application of echo that interests me, and the fact that any patient with a heart problem can be helped by an echo, aligned to the fact that you can do an echo in every patient. So there is no patient that can't have an echo. So it's ubiquitous in its application and always useful. And it's the only test we really have that we can use in an emergency. So if somebody is critically ill in front of you in casualty or wherever, and you need immediate information about their heart function, echo is the only tool we have that can do that. And to do that well in a critical or stressful situation, you have to be very good at doing echo. So a priority for me when I was starting out in cardiology was to learn echo as quickly as I could and become as good at it as I could, and then develop my interest in the other techniques. So the principles of ultrasound are long established, and ultrasound was developed out of technology that came about during World War II, and it's principally based on the same technique in terms of radar or sonar, where a sound wave is transmitted and sent out, and that sound wave is reflected by an object or a structure or an item, and those sound waves are returned back to the source and are then received by effectively a microphone that listens to the returning sound. And from that returning signal, you can start to build up a picture. And the reason we put the word ultra in front of it just reminds us that the frequency of the sound waves used is extremely high frequency, and this isn't sound that we can hear, this isn't a noise that we can hear as humans, but it's a noise that sits at around between 3 and 5 megahertz, so extremely high frequency, and is generated by crystals which are located in the end of a probe, and they are stimulated to resonate through passing electrical current through the crystals. The high frequency sound is transmitted and radiates from the probe in a very controlled manner and travels through tissue, travels through blood, travels through the heart, and is reflected back by any structure in the heart where there is an interface between fluid and solid tissue, such as muscle or tendons or valves. Same probe that transmits the sound receives the sound, and through some quite powerful computer processing, those reflected sound waves are turned into usually a black and white image that we see on a screen. And those images are built up many, many times a second to produce a moving image, a movie image of the heart. And it's the same technology that we use in scanning babies for pregnant ladies. It's no different. But again, we're just using it to look at the heart. There are some slight differences in the computer hardware that we use and the actual probes that we use. But the basic technique is the same as that developed in the 50s and 60s. What's changed, if you like, is how we store the images and how we access them, because obviously now everything is done digitally. And certainly when I was learning Echo 15, 20 years ago, it was all stored on paper or on videotapes. So most of the recent changes are around how we handle and store the information. The actual technology is the same. So ultrasound works best when we have tissue or structures that transmit the sound waves clearly without any barrier or interruption. And the enemy, if you like, of ultrasound is air. And the thing that we have to work around and struggle to overcome is avoiding use any air between the probe and the principal structure we're trying to image. So in the real world, that causes two concerns. One is that there is no air between the probe and the skin. And that's why you'll know that we use jelly to cover the probe. And that jelly is just a simple water-based jelly that just acts as a, if you like, a seal between the probe and the skin to make sure there's no air that might interrupt the signal. And the second source of air that we commonly encounter is the patient's own lungs. Our lungs are full of air. And if you put an ultrasound probe over somebody's lung, you won't see anything at all because the ultrasound waves do not travel through the air. So the first skill that you have to develop when you're learning echo is how you can position the probe to avoid the patient's lungs and allow you to develop a window between the ribs on the chest that allow you to get a very clear view of the heart uninterrupted by any other structures like air from the lungs or potentially the stomach or sometimes the bowel if you're imaging through the abdominal wall, because if air is in the way, you really won't see anything at all. The importance of ultrasound in cardiology is clear in the sense that actually it's the most fundamental technique we use to evaluate someone's heart function. And almost every patient who comes up to our clinic to meet a cardiologist and have their heart evaluated comes in as an emergency with heart problems such as chest pain or a heart rhythm disturbance or a heart attack will have an ultrasound of their heart performed during that visit. And the reason for that really is that it's extremely straightforward. There are no risks associated with the procedure at all. It's painless and we can repeat it as many times as we want. And that's very different to some of the other techniques that we use in cardiology where we might use radiation, for example, or an MRI scan, which are much more restricted and cumbersome techniques. So the fact we have a technique that we can use in almost every scenario from an emergency through to a planned outpatient visit makes ultrasound and echocardiography fundamental to our assessment and evaluation of any patient with a heart problem. Furthermore, we can take the test to the patient. So again, if we're faced with an emergency scenario, ultrasound machines now are reduced to the size where they'll fit in your pocket, and you can take it to the patient and do the test immediately with no delay and take that result and add it to what you already know about the patient, and then obviously decide on the best treatment, the best management, and the best intervention you could offer to make that patient better. So there are several different types of ultrasound, all of which come back to the basic principle of transmitting a sound wave and receiving the signal. The differences in what we see on the screen are largely down to how we interpret those reflected sound waves. So the majority of the imaging we undertake with echo is basic two-dimensional ultrasound. By that I mean we see a thin slice of the heart, we see a moving image in black and white, and we can see the heart muscle and the structures of the heart moving in real time on the screen. In traditional 2D echo, we don't see the blood appears black, and our primary interest is in the solid structures of the heart, the muscle, the valves, and the tendons and the arteries. However, the moving blood also reflects sound, and by changing the settings on the machine, we can then start to identify blood flow within the heart. and that's based on a principle called Doppler, where the reflected sound waves are used to determine both the direction blood is moving in and also the speed blood is moving in. Because if we know how fast blood is travelling and in which direction, it starts to give us very important information about how well the heart is working, because the primary role of the heart is to pump blood, how well the valves of the heart are working, and whether blood can flow through the heart normally, whether there's any restriction to blood flow, or whether there's any abnormal blood flow because of a valve malfunction, and also whether there are any other abnormalities that we are familiar with, such as a hole in the heart, where there's a gap in the dividing wall between two chambers, and blood is able to flow through that hole, where in reality it shouldn't be able to travel. And it's with colour Doppler, where we can see the blood flow, that we start to get a more complete understanding of the heart. More recently, a technology which has been labelled as three-dimensional echo has been developed. Now, it's not truly three-dimensional in that the images we work with are two-dimensional images on a screen. The difference is that rather than seeing a single thin slice of the heart, we're now taking a much wider field of view and a broader angle of imaging. So rather than, again, seeing one thin slice, we're starting to see a cone of information. And that allows us to start to be able to see important structures of the heart in one picture. This technology probably has its most important role in looking at heart valve problems. And by using 3D echo, we can now, for example, see the mitral valve of the heart as a whole structure rather than a series of individual slices, allowing us to look down on the valve, recreate the sort of picture our surgeon will be able to see when they're operating, and that helps us in understanding the underlying pathology and then going on to think about what sort of treatments are required. So there are a number of different types of echocardiogram. Again, they all rely on the same fundamental principle of ultrasound, but what the different varieties reflect is what emphasis we're putting on which part of the heart we're evaluating, and also the scenario during which we do the test. So the workhorse of echo is the transthoracic echocardiogram. That's an echo performed via the thorax, via the chest, where the probe is put on the patient's chest and pictures of the heart are taken. Those images are taken with the patient lying quietly on their side and give us a very clear understanding of the basic heart function, basic anatomy, and whether there are any structural problems with their heart. In some patients, it's difficult to get clear pictures by imaging through the chest wall, partly because of the location of the heart behind the breastbone, the size of the patient's lungs, whether the patient has a large degree of fat covering the chest wall. And in some patients, we have to take an alternative view of the heart. So rather than imaging the heart from outside, we image the heart from the patient's esophagus or gullet, and that's done by passing a probe through the mouth and down into the food pipe to sit directly behind the heart, and that gives exceptionally clear pictures of the heart and the heart valves, because the esophagus runs directly behind the heart and therefore there's nothing else in between the probe and the heart. Obviously that's a more invasive procedure and we don't do that in everyone, and it's performed under sedation. The second thing we recognise is that many patients who have heart problems or symptoms that might reflect a heart problem develop those symptoms during effort or exercise and very rarely have symptoms when they're lying still. If we base our understanding and our evaluation on images obtained with the patient lying still, we may miss dynamic changes in the heart and dynamic pathology. So another category of echo is called stress echo, and that reflects the fact that we take pictures with the patient resting and then immediately compare those with pictures obtained with the heart under exercise or under stress to make the heart perform as it would if the patient could exercise to the point where their symptoms occur. Now that stress can be in the form of exercise, and patients can pedal on a specialised bicycle whilst lying still on a couch, or they could exercise on a treadmill, Or we can use a drug that's infused into a vein that fools the heart into thinking the patient's exercising, and the heart speeds up and accelerates and pumps harder, just as it would if the patient was walking on a treadmill, but the patient continues to lie on the couch, and we can therefore immediately start to monitor the heart function, both on exercise and at rest, and look for any changes. This is a particularly important test to look for coronary artery disease, where there's a restriction to blood flow to the heart muscle, which will not show up at rest, but will become obvious when the patient exercises and the heart is asked to work harder. There are also further additional types of echo imaging, and we can also now perform echo internally from inside the heart, where a very small miniaturized probe is passed from one of the veins, easily accessed at the top of the leg, and is passed up into the heart, and the ultrasound probe itself sits inside the patient's heart and takes pictures within the heart. And of course, as you might expect, this gives us the best quality pictures, because now there is nothing at all between our probe and the heart muscle, and we are in direct contact with the heart and get very clear pictures. Choosing between these techniques depends primarily on the question we want to answer. For the majority of patients, transthoracic echo performed from the chest wall is sufficient. If there are certain structures of the heart we want to see in more detail, particularly the valves of the heart or the upper chambers, then imaging via the esophagus, a transesophageal echo, gives us clearer pictures of these structures. There are one or two things within the heart that you cannot see from outside, and these include some small pockets based in the upper chambers of the heart where blood clots can form, and if we want to specifically evaluate for that and exclude those, transesophageal imaging is really the only way. Imaging from inside the heart itself is an invasive procedure and is restricted for use during operations and interventions where we're setting out to treat, for example, a hole in the heart, where we need, for obvious reasons, the most clear pictures we can generate, so we know exactly what we're doing with our tubes and wires and treatment devices to close a hole. And in that situation, imaging from within the heart is optimal. One of the key advantages of being able to image the heart clearly from within side is that we can pass the echo probe through the vein at the top of the leg, which requires only local anaesthetic, and the patient can be lying on a table wide awake with a probe inside their heart. The patient won't be able to feel it at all, and we can take very clear pictures of the heart anatomy and any structure, such as a hole in the heart, that we intend to treat. With advances in device technology, we can now also, again via the same vein at the top of the leg, pass a very thin, flexible tube into the heart and deploy a specialist plug which sits within the hole that we've found with our echo probe, therefore sealing the hole. And again, that's done with the patient wide awake, lying still on the table with just a small amount of local anaesthetic at the top of the leg. The procedure takes around 30 minutes. At the end of the procedure, the tubes and the echo probe are removed. The vein is compressed gently for a few minutes until bleeding has stopped, and the patient's able to go home a few hours later. So these various different types of echo have actually been in use for some time. Basic 2D transthoracic echo has been in use since the late 50s and became popular and widespread in the early 70s. The first explorations into transesophageal echo were performed around the same time, and actually the probe technology was again developed in around the 70s and has been in use ever since. Imaging from within the heart, which is termed intracardiac echo, is a more recent development, and the miniaturization technology allowing that to be undertaken has been in use since around 2000 and has taken some time to gain widespread adoption because it is a more complex and difficult technique. However, with recent changes in manufacture and further miniaturization of the probes, they're now small enough to be used in almost any patient and are now being used more widely across the country and across the world. One of the more recent advances in echo has been the development of so-called echo contrast agents. And these are injectable liquids that have been engineered to enhance our ability to image blood on echo. A lot of what we examine and report on is how well the heart muscle is moving. And to be able to do that, your eye needs to be able to detect the boundary between the edge of the heart muscle and the blood. Now, in many patients, you can get very clear pictures using standard 2D transthoracic echo. But in some patients, it can be difficult to clearly visualize where the muscle ends and where the blood starts. So these agents have been specifically designed to enhance how well the blood stands out. And the most common one we use is a technology where you have very, very small lipid, or in other words, fat globules. And within those globules are very small quantities of a very dense gas. It's sulfur hexafluoride, which is a gas that's very heavy. That gas sits within the lipid sphere and influences how the blood responds to ultrasound. And through some very clever dynamic ability with the gas within the lipid bubble, when a beam of ultrasound hits the bubble, it resonates at a very particular frequency. Now, by modifying the machine to listen to that reflection at that frequency, you can then engineer the machine to show up the blood pool much more strongly. And of course, your muscle will still reflect ultrasound, but effectively at a different frequency. And you can now display your image showing the muscle reflecting at one frequency and the blood reflecting at a different frequency, allowing you to separate them clearly and display them in a sense where the blood stands out as white and the heart muscle is rendered as black, and the interface or the boundary layer between the two becomes much, much more obvious. Then, of course, when we're exercising the heart and the heart is pumping vigorously and usually quite fast, perhaps as fast as 130 or 140 beats per minute, you need to be able to see that boundary and see the edge of the muscle as accurately as possible to allow you to make a clear diagnosis. These injectable contrast agents come as a vial which we prepare as we need them. We use one vial per patient, and they're simply injected into the patient's vein through a cannula, and they are very safe and almost risk-free. There are potential issues with allergic reactions, but they are extremely rare. And what they allow us to do is see the whole of someone's heart muscle chamber in much more clarity, be much more certain about heart function. They can help us to exclude things like clots within the heart or other masses or tumours within the heart that are sometimes difficult to show up with traditional echo. Echo is only one tool that we have to examine patients' hearts, and it's the one we use most commonly. But there is some information that we can't obtain with an echocardiogram, and we have to use additional diagnostic tools. These include coronary CT, so that's a CT scan, which is effectively an advanced form of X-ray, where by using radiation we can take very detailed pictures of the entire heart, and that can give us information over the heart structure, the arteries, the coronary arteries and the veins of the heart, which are difficult to see with echo. Another important technique we use frequently is MRI scanning of the heart. This is a technique based around very powerful magnetic fields, which alter the way hydrogen atoms within our body sit. And then again, by understanding how that changes in reaction to the magnetic field, you can generate pictures of the heart. The primary advantage of MRI scan is it gives us more information about heart muscle and can tell us whether there is normal muscle tissue, whether there is scar formation, and whether there's any swelling of the heart muscle, and also allows us to very accurately measure the size of the heart and the absolute function of the heart, which, although you can do this with echo in the majority of patients, isn't possible in all patients. Another commonly used imaging technique is to rely on radioactive labeled tracer substances, which are injected into a patient's bloodstream and are designed to preferentially enter the heart. You then use a special camera to measure the level of radioactivity within the heart, and this gives us an idea of how well blood is getting into the heart muscle. And that is a test that can again be performed at rest and after exercise, and is a very useful way of looking at whether there's any restriction to blood flow within the heart. One of the major limitations of echo is that we can only resolve structures down to perhaps 3 or 4 millimeters in size. Below that, it's very hard to see with echo, And the coronary arteries, the arteries that supply blood to our heart, are usually of around 3 to 4 millimeters in size. So we can't see the coronary arteries with echocardiography. We can see the heart muscle, which they supply blood to, but we can't see the arteries directly. And that's where techniques such as CT coronary angiography or traditional invasive angiography, where a small tube is threaded up through an artery into the heart, are required to allow us to visualize the arteries directly. Although the fundamental ultrasound technology developed 50 years ago is still the bedrock of echo, more recent improvements have focused on miniaturization of the technology. We've spoken about the fact we can now put echo probes within someone's heart. The other difference now is that an echo machine from 20 years ago would be a very, very large box filled with many computers that you would struggle to push around. Now we have echo machines that are smaller or around the same size as a routine laptop, and even smaller versions are appearing now where they are around the same size as a large smartphone with a probe attached, and they are now small enough to fit in your pocket. That means you can carry your echo machine around with you wherever you go, and if you're again attending an emergency or an urgent scenario, you have an echo machine immediately available, or you could use it in the clinic as an adjunct to your stethoscope. So as well as listening to the patient's heart, you'll be able to take some very simple pictures. Now obviously some of these smaller machines can't do all of the more advanced techniques we can do with our more traditional larger size machines, but for a very rapid assessment of heart function, they are extremely useful. The future of echo is exciting, and the next big advance will be moving to a completely wireless technique where there is no physical connection between the probe and the machine, and that will give us more flexibility in how we can set the room up, where we have to position the patient, and the fact that we're no longer actually attached to our echo machine. Things will continue to miniaturize, and I'm sure one day we will have probes that we can simply plug into something like a smartphone or an iPad and take our pictures. Those images obtained will be transferred wirelessly to a network rather than over wired connections as they are presently. And the exciting techniques like 3D echo will transmit down to these smaller devices. And I'm sure in 10 years' time we'll be using handheld devices that can do everything we can do now with a very large machine that's hard to wheel around. The ability for us to see the heart in detail is now a lot further on compared to 40 years ago, largely down to the computing power available. There is, however, a fundamental limit to what we can image with echo, which comes back to the principles behind it, in that ultrasound will only travel at a certain speed through the soft tissues of the body and the heart. And that speed of ultrasound, which is 1,540 meters per second, physically limits the frequency of the probe we can use. And the frequency of the probe we use limits the level of detail we can resolve. Now, there have been advances in how the crystals for the probe are made and how pure the ultrasound energy is that's transmitted, and that helps to reduce some of the artifact and some of the noise that again can get in the way of pictures. But our ability to resolve down to very small details, such as the coronary arteries or very small structures of the heart, is very unlikely to improve if we continue to use ultrasound in its traditional manner. There are people thinking about how we can use different frequency sound to perhaps image smaller structures, but these technologies are very early in development and will take a long time to come to the clinical arena. Echo is a fundamental skill for anyone wanting to assess and evaluate heart function, and although at first principles it seems to be quite a straightforward technique, you pick up the probe, put some jelly on the probe and put the probe on the patient's chest, it is in fact quite a complicated skill to learn. And for most people it will take between 2 and 3 years of fairly continual practice, learning and education to become a skilled echocardiographer. That means in effect taking pictures of around 2,000 patients to allow you to see sufficient range of both normal hearts and abnormal hearts, and develop the skills required to perform the technique. When you've been undertaking echo for some time, like most activities we all do regularly, it becomes automatic. You don't have to think about what your hand is doing. The probe will find its own way onto the patient's chest and find the right spot. And you can then focus your attention on the pictures you're seeing. When people are setting out to learn echo, their emphasis is on where to put the probe and how to get the picture. And actually it's quite hard to then force yourself to look at the picture and try and understand what you're seeing. Remember at the same time that whilst one of your hands, usually your right hand, is controlling the probe and putting it in the right position, your left hand is in use controlling the machine and changing the settings on the machine, which can have a profound impact on what you see. And if you're not careful and your machine settings are not right, then you can make abnormalities appear and you can cause problems to appear that aren't actually real problems. They're just artifacts caused by either errors or problems with how you've set the machine up. So there are three distinct aspects to learning echo. One is the ability to use the probe effectively to obtain good quality pictures. The second is to maximize your use of the machine and the settings of the machine to make sure you're looking at these structures in the appropriate manner with the appropriate tools. And then the third and most important aspect is being able to understand the images you're developing and producing to understand whether you're looking at pathology that's real or whether you're looking at artifacts. And then beyond that is the language and tools that you use to describe your findings when you write a report about the echo. Because, of course, what the person who's asked for the echo gets back is a written description of your findings and not the actual pictures.